That's just the way that empty trash can sitting by my side. Gagging on the good times and the tears I cried. So I get up late and wonder what went wrong. A sad reminder when I hear your song. Light up a smoke and brush my tears to the side. I can't escape from how I feel inside. But I know that's just the way that it goes. When you're an average Joe living in the borough. Well, hey-ho, the time is much too slow. In the borough.
Try to hold on to you. University Radio, WMFO 91.5 FM.
See the waves on the ocean, never ending and unrelenting. Life is ruled by emotions, ever learning, forever yearning. Keep me going.
Welcome to Reed's Reading Room. It's now 1:26, 1:27 a.m., and I am 27 minutes late. Per usual. Happy to be joining you tonight. I hope y'all are having a good night. I am. Had some fresh sourdough bread earlier. You're listening to Brian Eno. Music for films in the background. I didn't know what to expect, and it sounds scary right now. Not exactly what I was going for, but we'll let it play. If you're new to the show, what I like to do is read a passage from a book, then play a song that's related to it, or just talk about it, kind of let it roll. This is freeform radio anyways, and I take that to its very core and show up completely unprepared with no previous agenda and let the show play out as it wants to. I relinquish control. I've been reading Jack Kerouac. Just finished On the Road and started Dharma Bums. Dharma Bums. I like Dharma Bums better right now. On the Road is so manic, and there are only brief moments where he taps into some kind of philosophy or way of life that he's trying to evoke to you. Probably one in every 50 pages he says something along the ramblings. It just pops out when he's describing the scenery and says something from the heart. But in this book, he's much more contemplative and Buddha? He's trying to find Buddha. And peace, calm, stripping down what civilized individuals, what kind of castles made of sand everybody lives in, breaking that down and trying to live in the purest form possible. That's what I would say it's about so far. He's met a guy named Jaffe, who grew up in Oregon, in the mountains, and then the forests, and then the log cabins, and the log men, and climbing the mountains, trying to find serenity and peace. I'm going to play a PSA just to get it out of the way. This one's Cold Dog, Don't Leave Pets Outside.
Outside with only a thin coat to protect you from the bitter cold. Desperate, you call out to your family, but they ignore you. All alone, you shiver and shake as frostbite sets in and you slowly freeze to death. When it's cold, bring your cat or dog inside. Make sure other outside animals have adequate food, water, and shelter, and report neglect immediately. For more information, visit PETA.org or call 757-622-PETA.
I'm on page 76, if you all can help me remember that. I'll probably forget. Well, there in Canada, they got them. Over in British Columbia, I used to meet some on the trail. We pushed the bike down past various college hangouts and cafeterias and looked into Robbie's to see if anybody we knew was there. Alva was in there working his part-time job as a busboy. Jaffe and I were kind of outlandish looking on campus in our old clothes, and the fact that Jaffe was considered an eccentric around the campus, which was the usual thing for campuses and college people to think whenever a real man arrives on the scene. Colleges being nothing but grooming schools for the middle class non-identity, which usually finds its perfect expression on the outskirts of the campus in rows of well-to-do houses in the lawns and the television sets in each living room, with everybody looking at the same thing and thinking the same thing at the same time, while the Jaffes of the world go prowling in the wilderness to hear the voice crying in the wilderness, to find the ecstasy of the stars, to find the deep, dark, mysterious secrets of the origins of the faceless, wonderless, crapulous civilization. All these people, said Jaffe, all they got are white tiled toilets and take big dirty craps like bears in the mountains. But it's all washed away to the convenient supervised sewers, and nobody thinks of crap anymore or realizes that their origin is crap and the civet scum of the sea. They spend all day washing their hands with creamy soaps they secretly want to eat in the bathroom. He had a million ideas. He had all of them. This is on page 28 of the Dharma Bums. I like that passage because it alludes to a inner crapness that we all have, that we all try to deny. It's part of the human condition. Everybody going out with powdered faces, moisturized skin, exfoliated pores, shampooed and conditioned hair, deodorant, but we all are crap. Exude crap. Breathe, eat, smell like crap. Crap is everywhere. Don't deny the crap. Just flush it away. Embrace the crap. Next night, about midnight, Colin and I and Olive got together and tried to decide to buy a big gallon jug of burgundy and bust onto Jaffe in his shack. What's he doing tonight? I asked. Oh, says Coughlin, probably studying, probably screwing. We'll go see. We bought the jug on Shattuck Avenue, way down, and went over. And once more I saw his pitiful English bicycle on the lawn. Jaffe travels around on that bicycle with his little knapsack on his back all up and down Berkeley all day, said Colin. He used to do the same thing at Reed College in Oregon. He was a regular fixture up there. Then we'd throw big wine parties and have girls end up jumping at the windows and playing Joe College pranks all up and down town. Gee, he's strange, said Alva, biting his lip in a mood of marvel, and Alva himself was making a careful, interested study of our strange, noisy, quiet friend. We came in the little door again. Jaffe looked up from his cloth-legged study over a book, American poetry this time, glasses on, and said nothing but, ah, in a strange, cultured tone. We took off our shoes and padded across little 5 feet of straw to sit by him, but I was last with my shoes off and had the big jug in my hand, which I turned to show him from across the shack, and His cross-legged position, Jaffe suddenly roared, "Yeah!" Jumped up into the air and straight across the room at me, landing on his feet in a fencing position, with a sudden dagger in his hand and the tip just barely stabbing the glass bottle with a distinct click. It's the most amazing leap I had ever saw in my life, except by nutty acrobats, much like a mountain goat, which he was, it turned out. Also, it reminded me of a Japanese samurai warrior, the yelling roar, the leap, the position, his expression of comic wrath, his eyes bulging and making a funny face at me. I had a feeling it was really a complaint against our breaking in of his studies and against wine itself, which would get him drunk and make him miss his planned evening of reading. But without further ado, he uncapped the bottle himself and took a big slug, and we all sat cross-legged and spent 4 hours screaming news at one another. One of the funniest nights. Some of it went like this. Jaffe. "Well, Clawin, you old fart, what have you been up to?" Clawin. "Nothing." Oliva. "What are all these strange books here? Pound. Do you like Pound?" Jaffe. "Except for the fact that these old fart-faced flub up the name Li Pu by calling him his Japanese name and all such famous twaddle, he was all right. In fact, he's my favorite poet." Ray. "Pound? Who wants to make a favorite poet out of a pretentious nut?" Jaffe. "Have some more wine, Smith. You're not making any sense. Who's your favorite poet, Alva?" Ray. "Why doesn't anybody ask me my favorite poet? I know more poetry than all you put together." Jaffe. "Is that true?" Alva. "It might be. Haven't you seen Ray's new book of poems he just wrote in Mexico? Quote, the wheel of the quivering meat conception turns out the void, expelling ticks, porcupines, elephant, people, stardust, fools, nonsense." Ray. "That's not it." Jaffe. "Speaking of meat, have you heard the new poem of etc., etc., then finally disintegrating into wild fast talk fest and yell fest and finally song fest with people rolling on the ground with laughter and ending with Alva and Clawin and I staggering up the quiet college street arm in arm singing Eli, Eli at the top of our voices and dropping the empty jug right at our feet, a clash of glass, and Jaffe laughed from his little door. But we'd made a miss in his evening of study, and I felt bad about that until the following night when he suddenly appeared at our little college with a pretty girl and came in. Sounds like fun. It's a passage I saw that I really wanted to read on air, but I didn't have any post-it notes at the time. So, I'm just gonna peruse around. You know, peruse means look closely, but also peruse as in look loosely. I did. Thank you. This is The Sun Also Rises by Ernest Hemingway. Chapter 1. Robert Cohen was once middleweight boxing champion of Princeton. Do not think that I am very much impressed by that as a boxing title, but it meant a lot to Cohen. He cared nothing for boxing, in fact he disliked it, but he learned it painfully and thoroughly to counteract the feeling of inferiority and shyness he had always felt on being treated as a Jew at Princeton. There was a certain inner comfort in knowing he could knock down anybody who was snooty to him, although being very shy and thoroughly nice boy, he never fought except in the gym. He was Spider Kelly's star pupil. Spider Kelly taught all his young gentlemen to box like featherweights, no matter whether they weighed 105 or 205 pounds. But it seemed to fit Cohen. He was really very fast. He was so good that Spider promptly overmatched him and got his nose permanently flattened. It increased Cohen's distaste for boxing, but it gave him certain satisfaction of strange sort, and it certainly improved his nose. In the last year at Princeton, he read too much and took to wearing spectacles. I never met anyone in his classes who remembered him. They did not even remember that he was middleweight boxing champion. I mistrust all frank and simple people, especially when their stories hold together, and I always had a suspicion that perhaps Robert Cohen had never been middleweight boxing champion, and that perhaps a horse had stepped on his face, or that maybe his mother had been frightened or seen something, or that he had maybe bumped into something as a young child, but I finally had someone verify the story from Spider Kelly. Spider Kelly was not only remembered Cohen, he had often wondered what had become of him. Robert Cohen was a member through his father of one of the richest Jewish families in New York, and although his mother of one of the oldest. The military college where he prepped for Princeton and played a very good end on the football team, no one had made him race conscious. No one had ever made him feel he was a Jew, and hence any difference to anybody else until he went to Princeton. He was a very nice boy, a friendly boy, a very shy, and made him bitter. He took it out in boxing, and he came out of Princeton with a painful self-consciousness and the flattened nose, and was married by the first girl who was nice to him. He was married for 5 years and had 3 children, lost most of the $50,000 his father had left him, the balance of the estate having gone to his mother, hardened to a rather unattractive mold under domestic unhappiness with a rich wife. And just when he had made up his mind to leave his wife, she left him and went off with a miniature painter. As he had been thinking for months about leaving his wife and had not done it because it would be too cruel to deprive her of himself, her departure was a healthy shock. Oh no. The disc went out. Hold on. One moment, please.
Welcome, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Smokey Colbert, filling in for Smokey on his birthday. Because after 75 years of...
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Turns out there's much more to say. Just look at the news. Nearly 90% of wildfires are caused by us humans being careless. And I'm not just talking about obvious things like campfires, or letting your totally sweet nephew, Francis, play with matches. I'm talking about dumping your used barbecue coals willy-nilly or parking your car on tall, dry grass. That can lead to poof! Guess the song was wrong. We did start the fire. But listen, being a South Carolinian, I respect Mother Nature and her trees, whether coniferous, deciduous, or new car scented. So if you love the outdoors like me, go to smokeybear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention, because fire safety is always in season. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
right now?
Right before
You just heard Meet Me in the Morning by Bob Dylan off Blood on the Tracks. Next up is Charles Bukowski, The American Flag Shirt. The American Flag Shirt. Now more and more, all these people running around wearing the American Flag Shirt, and it was more or less once assumed, I think, but I'm not sure, that wearing an AFS meant to say that you were pissing on it. But now, they keep making them, and everyone keeps buying them, and wearing them, and the faces are just like the American flag shirt. This one has the face, and that shirt, that one has that shirt, and this face, and someone's spending money, and someone's making money, and as patriots became more and more fashionable, it'll be nice when everybody looks around and finds that they're all patriots now, and therefore, who is there left to persecute except their children? Grim. The simple truth. You just don't know how to do it. You know that, and you can't do a lot of other useful things either. It's the fault of the way you were raised, some of it, and you'll never learn now. It's too late. You just can't do certain things. I could show you how to do them, but you still wouldn't do them right. I learned how to do a lot of necessary things when I was a little girl, and I can still do them now. I had good parents, but your parents never gave you enough attention or love, so you never learned how to do certain simple things. I know it's not your fault, but I think you should be aware of how limited you are. Here, let me do that. Now watch me. See how easy it is. Take your time. You have no patience. Now look at you. You're mad, aren't you? I can tell. You think I can't tell? I'm going downstairs now. My favorite TV program is coming on. Don't be mad because I tell you the simple truth about yourself. Do you want anything from downstairs? A snack? No? Are you sure?